Hi, this is Andy.
And hi, this is Sunny. And you are listening to the Business Over Chai podcast.
Our mission is to share startup stories that will inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs across the South Asian community.
In today's episode, we speak to Palm Bangle, founder of Bangle's Construction Consultants, which started in 2010, providing quantity surveying, estimating and project management services. Palm quickly recognised a second gap in the market, which led him to opening his second business, which is My Build Estimate, providing online estimating services to private clients, builders merchants and professionals in the construction industry. Palm has won 14 awards through various organisations, including Young Entrepreneur of the Year, in 2019 in the SME National Business Awards, and Small Business of the Year, also in 2019 in the SME Northamptonshire Business Awards. In our conversation, we also go on to discuss the book he has written, which is aimed at helping people with small business success, and we also talk about a new venture that he's about to launch in the food industry. Hey Palm, great to have you on our show.
Hey Sunny, Andy, good to be here. Thank you for having me on.
No, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate the time and effort you're doing to be on the show. So I guess the first thing we want to talk about, Palm, is we know that you run multiple businesses. If you could just give us a kind of a high level introduction to each one and what each one does, that'd be great.
Yeah, so I own a few businesses in construction and property. The first business I set up was Bangle's Construction Consultants, which is a quantity surveying and project management business, essentially. So with quantity surveying, it helps developers and architects cost projects and manage construction projects, mainly in the residential sector, but we also do some commercial as well. We work pretty much nationally across the UK. I run another company called My Build Estimate. It's a construction estimating business. I set that up in 2014. That works with mainly builders, so one-man band builders or some larger builders as well, trades, contractors. What you find with a lot of them is they don't actually have a lot of time to price their projects up. So what happens is they'll have someone like us sitting in the background that'll help them price their projects. So a lot of the time when you ask a builder or a trade to give you a price for a project, they'll come to an estimating firm such as us to price it up on their behalf, just because they're out on site all day. So that's what My Build Estimate does. I also own a company called Azadi Properties. Azadi Properties is our property management company. We own our own property portfolio within that and do our own personal development within that company. I think that's been going since 2015, so 6 or 7 years now. And we've got a nice portfolio of properties sat within that. I have a company called Amico Design, which is an architectural company. So we help clients with planning, building regs. So again, if you're looking to do an extension, we can come out, draw the plans up for you. We can do 3D renders. We can do building regs. So in terms of construction consultancy, we try and keep it like everything within the wrap. So, you know, if you came to us from the front end, we could help you with design, planning, building regs, help you cost the project, help you find contractors, contracts, and essentially see the entire process through. So that's kind of what our companies do and what they are.
Yeah, so you're like a kind of a one-stop shop there. You know, you just you go to you and you can take care of the whole project there. So you must love property and real estate for you to have many businesses in the same kind of area, in the same sector.
Yeah, I think property and construction and real estate has been a big part of me since I was a young kid. That's the sort of industry I like being in. So I love the construction industry. It's a great industry. And it's one of them industries that kind of will always be there. So people are always going to need somewhere to live. And it's a challenging industry. It's not an easy industry. But I genuinely love the industry that we're in. And I'd love to continue to expand the group, and we have lots of vision for where we want to take it and where we want to grow it to. But yeah, I genuinely love what I do.
That's great. obviously now you've grown to such a, you know, large organization. You've got 31 employees, you're 2 million in revenue, but you know, this didn't happen overnight. And, you know, by way of context, you and I and Sunny, we actually went to school together, and that's how we know each other. And we've just seen you, you know, grow as an entrepreneur and seen you do so much, you know, online and in the space of business and specifically construction. So my question to you next would be, you know, you touched on, you know, I liked seeing construction, but before all of that, you know, where were you raised? What was your schooling like? And, you know, what inspired you to take that leap of entrepreneurship?
I think, so I'm from Bedford originally, same as you guys, born and bred, Queen's Park. Didn't go private. I wasn't privately educated. I was just educated like everyone else. You know, we were surrounded by normal people. I think the benefit of living in Bedford, and this is one of the things I say to everyone, is such a culturally diverse community. You know, we went to school with lots of different communities, and a lot of places in the UK actually don't have that. You know, they're segmented. Like, it's predominantly white schools or predominantly Asian schools or predominantly black schools. Whereas in Bedford, we didn't have that. And I think growing up like that has taught me a lot. And it taught me a huge amount. And I'm very grateful for where I grew up. I moved to Birmingham, done my degree at Birmingham City University in quantity surveying. I'd done that as an apprenticeship. So essentially was doing day release there, but I actually lived in Birmingham, working in Northampton. So I was traveling back this way. That's essentially how I grew up. I got mum and dad, and I got one younger brother. And we're just a normal family. Both my parents worked in factories. I was spent a lot of time with my grandfather. So my granddad, he was a pivotal person in my life growing up. And that, I think that generation of people are all about hard graft. They came from India, they came with nothing, and they built us up to where we are today. So, you know, yes, I've built an incredibly successful company, but I'm very grateful for the decisions that they made and he made to come here and set up a better life for us. And it's because of that we're able to do what we do today.
That's great. Yeah, no, and thank you for being so honest and open. I mean, it sounds like, you know, working class family that, you know, did, you know, made a family and made a living and inspired you to go on to go to university. After university, you went into an apprenticeship. Could you share us how that went? You had some interesting experiences there as well.
Yeah, I think the apprenticeship was great for me because actually the company I worked for funded it all. I was working, so I was gaining a huge amount of knowledge. And that's the difference between people that don't do an apprenticeship and people that do an apprenticeship. The beauty is that after my apprenticeship, I had a good amount of experience and a great CV, but I had my degree as well. So that helped me a huge amount in the industry because I was coming out on par with people the same age as me, but they were coming out with no experience and I was coming out with a level of experience. So as an employee, for an employer, you're instantly more desirable because you've got the piece of paper, but you've also got the experience as well. So you're kind of a few steps ahead of a lot of the other peers that you're with, which helps a lot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess when you went to do your degree, was the idea always going to be that you're going to be working for other people? Or did you have there somewhere in the back of your mind that maybe I'd like to own my own kind of business someday?
You know what? The idea was always to work for other people. I didn't actually aspire to own my own business. I never actually even thought about that. When I was working, I quite enjoyed my first job and enjoyed working where I did. And I never really thought, oh, I'd love to do this for myself. I always knew I wanted to be successful and I always knew I wanted to buy property and build things. As for did I want to run a business or the business that I'm in? No, I didn't. I knew I wanted a property portfolio and I knew I wanted to do construction, but I didn't know that I was going to be running a business or did it. I didn't really want to run a business. It was never in my mind.
So then what happened? So what happened during your apprenticeship that made you, you know, have a little kind of moment saying, actually, let me think about running my own business or do something for myself?
So after I finished my apprenticeship, I actually moved to another role. So I moved to a job in London. At the time, it wasn't a good move. But now when I look back, probably the best move I ever made. So I moved to this job and my boss was not the greatest. I could use some incredibly flowery language right now, but I'm not going to do that.
Thank you for respecting our guest part.
Yes. he was not the nicest person in the world. And I think when you're driving an hour and a half to work and driving an hour and a half back, and you're spending 3 hours on the road every day and working 8 to 10 hours and putting everything in, and you feel unappreciated and you feel like the person that you're working for doesn't respect what you do and wasn't even respecting what I do. He didn't respect the people at all, anyone around him. And he was just not a nice person. And actually the story behind it is I'm a bit of a clean freak. I went into work one day and I'd always wash my dishes and take my lunch in boxes and make sure everything was tidy. And one day I went into work and there was a whiteboard, and we used to have whiteboards with lists of things that we had to do on it. And the top of my whiteboard had dishes. And so he'd put on my whiteboard that I needed to wash the dishes. And I was like, what? Wash the dishes? So I went to the sink and the sink was filthy. It was disgusting. It was piled high with other people's plates and mugs. And bearing in mind, whenever I took my own mug to work, so I'd always wash it and bring it back to my desk. And I actually thought, you know what? I'm going to clean this thing. I'm going to wash the dishes and I'll clean this thing. And I've actually got a photograph on my phone of when I'd done that. So I had a before and after photograph. But that was the last straw for me, because I thought, actually, you're starting to take the Michael now. I hardly ever even use the kitchen, and you want me to wash everyone in the office's dishes? Like, have some respect, mate. Like, I'm not better than that, but there comes a point where you say to people, like, you need to wash your own dishes, not get one person and single them out and go, wash the dishes. So I waited for him to come into work, and I told him where he could stick his job, again, with some flowery language, because I was extremely annoyed. And I left my laptop, my phone, everything, just left it down the desk. I said, not working my notice period. You are this, this, and this. I'm out of it. And I left. And on my drive home, I thought, oh my God, what have I just done? coming from a hardworking family, I thought, I'm going to get home and get one clip around the head for quitting my job without finding another job. And, you know, even today, I'm 33 years old. We respect our parents. You know, if my mum wants to give me a slap, she'll still give me a slap. And so I was driving home thinking, yeah, I'm going to get some flowery language from my mother now. But you know what? I left and I thought, actually, you know, I've made the right decision here, because I can't do this. I always knew I was very good at my job. And you sometimes know in life when you're good at something, especially when you have a passion for something. So I always knew that I'd find another job. And when I got home, I thought, actually, you know, this is not brain surgery. I know the job. Why can't I just do it for other people? So I thought, actually, I'm going to set it up myself and just do it myself. And I roped in a few family members. I got my brother-in-law to make me a website. I got one of my cousins to design me a business card, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to give it a year. I'm going to see how it goes, and I've never looked back since then.
All thanks to a pile of dishes, eh?
All thanks to some dirty dishes. All thanks to some dirty dishes. So, yeah, like I said, it was a horrible experience, and it was a bad move for me to move from the company I was working for to this company. So every kind of decision has a consequence. And I think that was the path I was supposed to take.
No, that's really good. And, you know, very dramatic end to your first job, which is unfortunate, right? Like at the end of the day, you know, you just graduated. This was your new and first opportunity straight after university. And then there you go, like, you know, the work culture was just not right. And you were being mistreated. And I think a lot of people, even in previous you know, conversations in our podcast have talked about how important work culture is. And and that's probably shaped you going forward about how should I, as an entrepreneur, how should I, as a business owner, create culture that, you know, inspires not only you, but your clients, but also your own employees. So I love the fact that, you know, while it was a very, you know, not so pleasant experience, I'm sure it's shaped you in the way that you are today and how you think about work culture.
Yeah, absolutely. I think anything bad that happens or anything that doesn't go right for you, you have to take a learning from it. And if you don't learn from it, that's then your mistake. But you want to try and learn from other people's mistakes. He made a mistake and he lost someone good. And I will always try and ensure that our employees and our team here don't have that same experience. And we try and have a different environment.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, really important there, Palm. So you decided to set up your own shop, which was Bungle's Construction Consultants. And then you talked about how your family kind of pitched in to help with, you know, the various things that they could, like setting up a website. How did you kind of get it going? You know, how did you go about landing your first client and get the business moving forward?
First client was an interesting one because I went in a lot cheaper than I should have. The best way to guarantee winning business is be cheap. Not
on purpose, right? You did this on purpose, right?
100%. Okay. 100%. Everyone has a budget, and if you're below that, they'll sometimes give you a chance on it. So from my perspective, I thought, I want to win this business. So actually, as long as it pays for what I need it to pay for the next 8 months while I manage this project, it'll be absolutely fine. It gives me some time to cash flow the business, generate some money, and use that revenue to start marketing. And I've done exactly that. So I actually won the first project that I pitched for, simply because I knew I was going to be cheaper than everyone else. And that was a strategic decision for myself to ensure that I could give a good go at it. Because when you're new in business, you can't pitch yourself at a rate that you're not worth. At that time, I was not worth a lot. Although my services were worth a lot, as a company, we were brand new. So the client was taking a chance on us just as much as anyone else. It was a strategic decision. I went in cheap, they said yes, and I worked my socks off to ensure that project went well. I overdone everything. I overcommitted. I overdelivered. Just to ensure that ultimately that client was satisfied. During that time, I spent my out of working time developing the business. So as I was building this website, I was doing some marketing, I was calling contacts, I was making phone calls, I was networking, I was doing B&I. So I was like going out for coffee mornings at 5:30. And I was doing all this kind of stuff just to get myself out there and try and win some more business. And halfway through running this first project, I got another project, and it kind of just went on from there. That strategy I used for probably about 3 years of being the cheapest in the market. And I've done that specifically to ensure that we had a solid base. Would I recommend that to other business owners? I'm not sure. It depends what your financial position is as well, as to whether you can or cannot do that, because the business wasn't necessarily financially benefiting me at the time, but I was building a brand, and that what was important to me. I was building credibility, I was building the brand, I was building the business. And for me, that was the most important thing for me at the time. It wasn't necessarily the revenue, the profit, it wasn't anything like that. Anything that was coming into the business was basically going back out. It was going back out on marketing, it was going back out on PR, it was going back out on networking. And that was very much how I started my business.
And was that because you kind of realized that the industry is one where if you do a good job, you're going to get kind of repeat customers?
Absolutely. I think that's with any business. I think if you do a good job for people and people like you, that's really important. People have to like working with you, because mistakes will always happen. So You can say about doing a good job. I've had projects that haven't gone well, and we've done a good job in the end, but during the process, it hasn't gone as swimmingly as it should have done, which you can't always guarantee that that's going to happen. But if a customer or client likes to work with you and generally have liked your approach, they will still recommend you because they appreciate that not everything goes swimmingly well all the time, but the person approached it in the correct method and they were in a position where they enjoyed working with you. So they'll recommend you for that reason.
Thanks, Palm, for sharing that. I just wanted to move on to your second venture, which is more about the My Build Estimate business that you started up, which is an online platform. There was a specific interaction that you had with Jewson, which is a pretty large British-based builders merchant selling to small and medium building contractors. Could you share about that engagement and that conversation you had?
Jewson's came to me and said they wanted to use our estimating services. They came to Bangles because we were a growing brand at this time and we were putting ourselves out there. And a lot of people were starting to take us on and use our service because we were a little bit different to the other estimating services out there. We were pitched up against another company and the other company actually won it. And the other company won it because they were a sole estimating business. And we weren't. We were a quantity surveying, estimating, project management business. So Jewson didn't want to work with someone that had lots of different tails to their business. So that's how My Build Estimate came about. My Build Estimate came about because I lost that contract. And I thought, actually, this needs to be a brand of its own. It needs to be an estimating brand that can work with builders, merchants, and builders as a standalone business. So the message is not confused, because sometimes when you're a QS firm, you do project management, you do QS work, you do contracts, you do valuations, you do bank monitoring. There's so many different services you can offer, and a builder or a simple service like that can come to you and get confused within all the messages that are going on within your website. So I thought, actually, this deserves to have its own brand. So I thought, let's set up our own brand for this. So then My Build Estimate was born, and it was a sole estimating business for that purpose. And, you know, although I was disgruntled that I lost that business and I wasn't happy that I lost that business, but if I look back, I probably wasn't ready for that business, one. So it was a blessing. And two, it gave me the opportunity to set up what is now a fantastic brand. For estimating, it's a phenomenal brand. And, you know, one day we will pitch for that type of business again. But at the moment, we're just trying to get our systems and processes bang on, really perfect. And we're growing the business. You know, if you look, I set up Bangles in 2010 and then I set up My Build Estimate in 2014. Now, the revenue we generated from 2010 to 2014, by the time we got to 2014, we were the same turnover in My Build Estimate in 2 years that it took us to build 4 years in Bangles. And that's simply because I'd learned so many lessons in business, right? And I knew how to brand the business. I knew how to shape it. I knew how to set it up. I knew how to deliver the message. I knew how to set up the website. I got there a lot quicker than I did with Bangles as the initial brand. But that will always be home for me. Bangles Construction Consultants would always be home for me. But our newer brands, they grow quicker and they generate revenue quicker. One, because the way we run our business is one which we like to maintain cash in the business so we can always invest. So we now, when we set up a new brand, so we've set up a Zardy, we set up a Miko, there was cash revenue to be able to invest in it. So it didn't require waiting. But yeah, like for me, that Jewson's deal didn't go through. But now I look back and think it was a correct thing that happened. It was the right thing that happened. And I'm grateful it happened in that way because it's given me opportunity to set up another fantastic brand that is a phenomenal business within our group.
Blessing in disguise.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had a lot of them in 10 years, believe me.
No, that's great. My Build Estimate is an interesting one because, you know, it's not only a front-end website for getting estimates, but it's a lead gen tool, I guess, for yourself, for maybe Bungalows Construction, or for others as well. So you're collecting effectively this information, and you're then able to create another channel of business, but it's very, very specific to the niche in the space of just estimation, which is like really interesting. Because I think sometimes businesses, when they think about building, they think about building multiple verticals too quickly. And then they say, okay, I want to do this thing, and then I want to do this thing, and this thing, and this thing. But what you've done here is actually separated and build out a niche that is solely, you know, focused on estimation. And so I really love the fact, and I think there's a lesson to be learned there about how sometimes as entrepreneurs, me included, you know, we try to do everything and throw everything in into what we can offer as a service. So yeah, really interesting. But, you know, there's some other pieces that you talked about in our previous conversation about being client-centric. And you gave us, you know, some example of a challenge where you were trying to be client-centric. Could you talk through an example of that?
Yeah, so the example I spoke to you guys about was a client that we had agreed to get delivering a project on a certain day. And it was an estimating job, so we agreed that we'd get it back to him by Monday morning. And he phoned me on Saturday morning, and I was driving, and he would have heard that I was driving. And he was like, why are you not in the office doing my estimate? And I was like, because it's Saturday morning. And we work Monday to Friday. And he was like, yeah, but you promised me Monday morning. And I was like, yes, I know I promised you Monday morning, and it will be with you on Monday morning. And he was very arsy on the phone. And it's the first time ever, he wound me up so much. And I've never done this. And even to this day, I've never done this. This is the first and only time I've done this. I told him that we would give him a full refund and that he could go somewhere else and go and get his service elsewhere. If I've told you I'll do something, I'll get it done for you. I don't want to be micromanaged. I run my own business and you run your own business. And that is a massive challenge in the business. And actually, that's one example. And that's an example from probably 2013, 2014, when we were 2, 3, 4 years into business. That challenge becomes more evident when you grow a business, because in the first 3, 4, 5 years, you're Palm, everyone's like Palm. I want to speak to Palm. And you are the brand, you're the ambassador, everyone wants to use you, everyone wants to speak to you. And then as you start getting employees and your business starts growing and you start having more clients, people are like, Palm. And you're a bit like, I haven't got enough time to speak to everyone. Our business is growing, we've got more clients. And if I don't start delegating this down, like, I'm going to have all the work to do, and I have my entire team sat there not having to do a lot because everyone wants to speak to me. So that challenge of being client focused, when you grow as a business, becomes more difficult. And I think it's really important the way in which you frame it. So now what my admin team, and we've been doing it, like, now it doesn't happen to me anymore because we've grown to a certain size and we kind of bypassed that. But we went through a period where I'd say to my admin team, right, okay, if someone asks me, put them through to X, Y, Z. And when they say, no, I only want to speak to Palm, you just tell them that, look, Palm's really busy. He's in a meeting. I can get this sorted for you right now with this person, or you're going to have to wait until tomorrow when Palm will be back in the office. So it was a expectation thing. And actually, it was more important for the client to get their work done instantly than it was to actually speak to me. So it was just the way in which we had to manage that process out, going from everyone wanting to speak to me to actually the importance of, you know what, we have people in the office that can answer your question instantly. You don't need to wait for Palm. We've got a fantastic team here, very experienced. Some of them have been in the industry longer than I have. So they've got more experience than I have. And it's that kind of direction that we had to take the business in.
I guess it works both ways, doesn't it, Palm? Because there's one thing from the client perspective for them to kind of trust that, you know, so-and-so can do the job. We don't necessarily need Palm. But then there's also from your perspective that, you know, are you able to delegate? It's not necessarily that you don't believe in your employees. It's just that sometimes, you know, you want to be in control of everything. You know, that can be a challenge as well. Have you kind of experienced that from your perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. I think anyone that sets up a business will struggle to delegate. There's kind of two categories here. So Bangles Construction Consultants are my broad estimate. It was my career path and it was what I'd done. It was what I was educated in. It is my job. So trying to delegate at that level becomes really difficult because actually when someone says, oh, can you do this? You're like, well, I can do that. Well, I'll get it done for you, blah, blah, blah. And I don't need to delegate it to anyone. Whereas I've got other brands where, like Amico Design, I'm not an architect. I'm never going to be an architect. Right. I don't know a huge amount about architecture. So when someone goes, can you do this? I'm like, yeah, I'll get so-and-so to do this because I can't actually do it myself. Sometimes when I think about business, I think when you're a business owner, do you want to start as an operator? Because when you start as an operator, someone that can actually do the job, it becomes incredibly difficult to, one, be able to delegate, and two, be able to pull yourself out of the business. And as your business grows, trying to pull yourself out of the business is very, very tough because you're so passionate about the growth. And it's kind of like having a baby. Like, I've got a little one.
Yeah.
And like, it's like your baby. Like, you know, oh, I do the invoice and I'll chase the client and I'll talk to the client and I'll do this because I've been so involved from day one. And in day one, I couldn't afford for it to go wrong. But that's no different to 10 years later. I still can't afford for it to go wrong.
Sure.
So regardless of whether you've got 31 employees or not, you know, it doesn't change from day one because your name is above the door. So it's always your personal brand that will suffer if something goes wrong.
We're just going to take a quick break. If you like what you're hearing, please remember to hit the subscribe button and we'd love to hear your feedback. So please remember to leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter on our handle Business Over Chai or on our website at businessoverchai.com. Thanks again. And now back to the podcast.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, when you're working in a company and you're not, you know, you're doing your job, you know, finance, you just give the finance piece to the finance team and marketing, you just give it to the marketing team. But you are finance, you are marketing and you are sales. You are everything. You are the product. And it's so difficult to try and figure out how, you know, how do you scale that? How do you think about bringing people in and entrusting them with your knowledge and talking to your clients and bringing your revenue in? It's a huge thing. And I think that I don't think there is one person that can say that they've got that right. And, you know, it's just a learning that you will have through your journey. I want to go into the next section about the leap from solo to becoming an employer. Now, you know, we talked about this again in our previous conversation about the worries that you had going from, you know, the affordability aspect of having staff, but then like a delegation comes is one part of it, but actually, you know, building and buying talent into your organization is another. So could you talk through some of the challenges you face going from solo to then actual employer of people?
I think so, being solo, you only have to worry about yourself. So if you have a bad week or you have a bad month, it's fine. You can usually cash flow it and you'll get through it. And when you're solo, you kind of generate enough money to survive yourself. So you kind of run it yourself and you think, oh, I need this much money to make my life work rather than necessarily thinking of it as a business. Now, so if I'm working at 100% and I'm getting paid 50%, I need to be working at 150% to be able to afford to pay number one employee, which made taking on that first employee quite difficult because from a business perspective, I needed to separate that revenue portion or try and build that revenue from 50% up to 75% to 100% to what we should have been billing in order to bring on the type of talent we needed to bring on. So bringing on that first employee was really hard because you're essentially replacing you. And replacing you is really hard because, you know, you don't want to be big-headed, but when you set up and you run your own business from scratch, you think you're the god of everything. Like, I can do this. I'm fantastic at marketing. I'm fantastic at accounts. I'm the best QS in the entire country. Like, you become the best at everything. So then you look at someone else and go, are they going to be able to do the job as good as me? Are they going to be able to do it as well as me? And no, they might not be able to. But the fact is, if you don't grow and you don't take that decision to take someone on, you're never going to grow. So what I did done was I started to increase prices and build up more revenue and ensure that the jobs were more profitable, built up some more cash flow in the business, and then started taking employees on. And it was tough. It was a tough decision because, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is that when you start taking employees on, you're the last person to eat at the table as well. So although it's your business and everyone thinks, oh, it's his business, but essentially everyone else gets paid first. And that's really important to me. I wanted to make sure that if I committed to taking someone on, I was committing to them like they were committing to me. I didn't want to be in a position where I took someone on and then after 3 months, you're like, oh, I'm sorry, we haven't got enough work for you. That there's zero option for that for me. If I take someone on, I need to know that I've got enough stuff to keep them busy, because people have lives and it's important. You know, business isn't everything. Looking after people and giving people security is very important. So I think going from solo to someone that has a fantastic team, I'm very fortunate that I've got a great team, has been hard work, and it still has its challenges. But this is the only way to grow a business. You can't grow a business without recruiting good talent and having a fantastic team.
That's really interesting, Palm. So just speaking about that growth, obviously you talked about how you strategically price at the beginning to kind of win the business out there, get your name out there, grow the brand. Then you take the decision to start employing people. What's kind of been harder for you to kind of, you know, initially get the business going? Or was it going from that kind of, you know, a couple of hundred grand stage to now, you know, you're 2 million plus in revenues? What's been harder for you? And, you know, what are the different challenges you've kind of faced along the way? You know, what's taking up more of your time now compared to initially?
Now, business strategy and processes is taking up all my time. Growth of the business takes up all my time. So technically, you know, in terms of delivering projects, doing estimates, I don't do any. It's not my job anymore. I do very, very little of that. So my role in 10 years has changed completely. It's flipped its on its head. You know, what I was doing 10 years ago, I do nothing of that now. In terms of the challenges, it's difficult because the model I've taken to bring people on in my business has been one of a training model. So the kind of model that I was employed on and the kind of model that I was recruited on. So that apprenticeship style will bring you on as a junior and will train you. That's been our model. And that's been our model for the last 5 or 6 years. So we bring on juniors or we bring on people that have been in the industry for a year or two, and then we train them to how we want them to work within our business. The challenge in any business, I think, is finding that talent, finding that talent pool, finding the right people, finding people that want to work. You know, people call this generation the entitled generation. I don't know if I entirely agree with that. There is some really hardworking people out there, but for most people, the number of likes you get on Instagram is more important than actually how many people like you in real life. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I see that more and more coming into my business as well. As you recruit younger people, they're so focused on social media and they forget about actually there's a big wide world out there. And what you do behind the scenes is actually really important. So I think the challenges for me now are ensuring I build a great team, but I want to build a great young team as well that continue to drive the business forward. None of us are getting any younger, and you know, I'd like my brands to grow. I'd like the brands to grow, but for me, I don't want to be a sole managing director. I'd like to be, I have a board of directors, and I would like to see the best talent I've trained from a young age come and sit at that board with me. That's my goal. You know, it comes to a point where you think, you know, you can't grow businesses by yourself. You just can't. You need good people around you. It's so, so important. So looking after people, growing the business is my biggest challenge at the moment. Finding the right people, training the people, getting your systems and processes right. And I talk a lot about systems and processes, especially on my YouTube and my Instagram. I do a lot of videos on systems and processes, because when you're one person or you're two people, you're three people, systems and processes are here, and you just know how to do an invoice, and you know how to do this, and you know how to do that, and you can deliver the same thing over and over again. When you have 5 admin staff and 26 people in your production team, you know, unless you have a process and you have a system, you're going to have 26 people doing it in a different way. And that doesn't deliver the client what they expect. When you go to McDonald's, I expect my Big Mac or my McChicken sandwich to be the same every single time. Yeah. So when someone comes and buys an estimate from my build estimate, I don't expect that that person should get one level of service one day and a completely different level of service the next day. So the challenges now are systems, processes, making sure that the delivery is perfect whilst growing a team and bringing in new members of the team, because the bigger you get, your processes and your systems have to change with that as well, because you're bringing in different demographics and different types of people to try and deliver different things in your business. So my challenges are definitely that, you know, growing the business and finding fantastic talent.
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting challenge you have there. You know, as you scale, are you thinking about those processes and how you think how you can make it consistent, a consistent experience for your employees, a consistent experience for your clients as well. I want to move on a bit and talk about some of the stuff that you've done. You've really achieved a lot of accolades and awards in over the last, you know, 10, 20 years now in your space of construction. You won the National Young Entrepreneur Award in 2019 at Wembley Arena in London. Congratulations for that. And just generally, you know, the idea of awards and trying to participate in those competitions as a really strategic thing for you as an organization set out by your PR. Could you talk about, you know, first your experience winning that award? How did that come about? And then number two, the idea of just being part of those kind of networks and communities of, you know, awards and how big that is and important that is for your business.
How it come about? So I employ a PR team who look after all of our PR, and again, everything we do in our business from day one, there's always a strategy behind it. You know, all my decisions are always strategic. We sit down, we discuss them, we look at the benefits, we look at the disadvantages of them, and we weigh everything up. Now, that part of our PR was actually something that was forced upon me. I would have never gone for any awards. I wouldn't have done it. I still to today would never have recorded a video if my social media team and my PR team hadn't forced me into it. Like, again, you know, when you employ good people, they force you to do things that you don't necessarily want to do. Just like I force some of my team to do things that they don't want to do, I'm being constantly forced to do things that I don't necessarily want to do. Now, it came about from when my PR team come to me and said, "Bom, you've got some fantastic businesses. You work your ass off. I think you can win some of these. You got, you know, we need to do it. So I was like, my first award that we went for was actually Young Business Person of the Year in Northamptonshire 2017. We got shortlisted. So I got shortlisted for that. And I was like, well, got to buy a suit now. go to the awards. People are like, are you nervous? I was like, not really.
You just didn't care.
Yeah, I actually genuinely did not care. And it sounds so like so stupid now that I went there and I was like, what am I doing here? What am I doing? It's like a Thursday evening. I just didn't want to be there. And I kind of felt like the biggest thing for me is I felt like I didn't deserve to be there. And that was the biggest thing for me. Mm. And I went there and I was like, if I don't win, I don't win. I don't really care. Like, I didn't expect to win. I didn't go there with the expectation to win. So they get through these awards and our award comes up and they're like, the winner is, and that's my name. And I looked at Karen, my wife, I looked at her and I was like, me? And she was like, I guess so. You're going to have to go up and get your award. So I went up, got that award, took a picture, and I posted it on LinkedIn. And that post got 33,000 views. And I was like, what? And my PR lady was like, see, I told you. And then I was like, right, okay, we need to get serious about this now. Like, what do we do? Like, what can we do? And so we got really serious about it. And we went down the strategy of actually doing it more seriously. And, you know, a lot of people go, oh, you get so many awards. But it's not about the awards. Like, people forget about that. That's like 2 minutes of limelight. You go up there, you pick an award up, you have a photograph, you go in a few magazines, and you get back to work. The reason why we get awards is because we run a phenomenal business. Our business is systemized, it's process-driven. We have a great PR team. We have a great marketing team. I work 12 to 15-hour days. Still to today, like I'm talking, I work more hours now than I did when I first started my business. So awards for me, like, people see you and go, oh, you're doing really amazing, but they don't see, you know, the bit behind it. Mm. So I read this phenomenal stat about Usain Bolt. In his entire career, the guy's only run like 300 seconds of competition time. 300 seconds, like 5, 6, 7 minutes, right? And you think, actually, 100 meters is 9 seconds, 8 seconds.
Yeah.
But that's just a show, isn't it? It's just, that's the show. Everything you have to do is behind the scenes that the people don't see, the day in the life of, like the waking up at 5 o'clock. That's what wins you awards. It isn't the fact that you're just there and people love you and, you know, it's all flowery. We win awards because we graft and we work hard. We work hard at everything we do. Everything we do, we go 110%. You know, if any strategy that's working, we go 110%. It's not, oh, let's just do it 50% and see what happens. We go, if that's the strategy, go with it and go with it properly. So awards for me has been a massive part of the strategy in the last few years. And the accolades are great. We've won probably 13 or 14 awards in 5 years. And, you know, I'm grateful for all the awards that we've won. But for me, them awards that sit in my cabinet downstairs, they represent what we do for our clients. They're not a representation of me, and they're not a representation of anything, really. That's what they represent for me is the graft and the hard work and the passion and the drive and the love for the business. That's what they represent for me.
You talked about, I mean, if it wasn't for your PR team, you wouldn't have recorded a video or entered awards. So I've got to ask you, were you forced to do our podcast today as well?
No, I wasn't. I love you guys. Yeah, went to school with you. I could never say no to you.
You know, we're aware that you're also writing a book, 5 Steps to Small Business Success, which is going to be released or published later this year. Could you share a bit about what inspired you to write the book and how you're going about it, and what are some of the lessons that you're going to be teaching in that?
Yeah, I think so. For me, I've always felt like I'm a good business owner, and I'm an entrepreneur. Hence why we set up several businesses last year. So started coaching and mentoring people, and it helped me to understand that people don't really understand all the relevant steps required to run a successful business. So for me, it was about teaching people that in an easy way. People try and overcomplicate business, and they try and make it out as if it's brain surgery, when really it's not. It's simple steps, and it's just being able to put them simple steps together. It's like building a building. You know, you start at the foundations and you get to the roof, and then you do the internal finishes. You can't build a roof. You can't build a house by doing the roof first. So there are simple steps to follow. And I think, you know, that will be marketing, sales, delivery, follow-up. You know, it's a strategic process. You market to the people, you then sell to them, they buy your service, you deliver the product or service, and then you ask them if you've done a good job and they would use you again and they'll recommend you to any other friend or family. That's it. That's business. In between that, you have other bits that you have to slot in, like understanding your accounts, understanding your legals, understanding how to put websites together. But fundamentally, it's a step-by-step process. And I think that's what the book's about for me, is teaching that to other people. And that's what the mentoring and the coaching is. Because people, a lot of my clients on the mentoring and coaching side, they're phenomenal at what they do. They might be a fantastic plumber or a roofer or plasterer or fantastic at buying property, but they're missing a piece of the puzzle. And every business requires every piece of the puzzle, because any piece falls down, that's where your business will suffer. You know, if your marketing falls down, you ain't gonna have no sales to make. You know, if your product or service falls down, you'll soon end your business, because no one's going to use it again, or no one's going to buy it again. So it's just the fundamentals of how you put all the pieces together and how you maintain all the pieces and improve all the pieces.
That's great, Palm. And what about you personally? So what kind of projects are you focused on in the future?
So we're venturing away from construction. Never thought I would do this, but it's a business that I've been very interested in for a long time. And when I say venturing away from construction, I don't mean that we're not doing construction anymore. Our construction businesses will continue to flourish. And as I mentioned, you know, we are looking to get to 100 people and we are looking to grow all of our brands. Yeah. But we are opening up a Wings and Burgers restaurant. It's going to be like an American sports bar in Milton Keynes. It is completely different to what I'm used to, but it was an opportunity that presented itself to me. And you know, I'm a massive foodie. I love food, I love hospitality, I love entertainment, and I think it was an opportunity for me to do something different to what I've been used to. All the businesses that we've set up today have all been within the construction and property arena, and this for me is outside of that arena. But I'm always willing to learn new things, and I'm always willing to push the boundaries and see what we can do. And I'm really excited for our new business. I'm really excited to launch it, and we're hoping our launch will be in 3 weeks. And yeah, we'll see how that space goes for us.
What's the name of the restaurant? Have you got a name yet?
Yeah, the restaurant's going to be called Wing Kings.
Awesome. So it sounds like this conversation is going to be full circle. It looks like you are going to potentially be washing the dishes now then, right? back in the restaurant. Are you
going to I will be washing dishes.
I'm joking. Will you be there, or is this going to be managed by somebody else?
We've got managers. We've taken on managers. I'm hoping not to be there. I'm trying to run it like a hands-off business. You know, during the conversation, I spoke about some of the disadvantages in knowing the business that you run, and being someone that actually does the job within your business can be a disadvantage, because you suck yourself into it. I'm not necessarily a chef. I've never been a waiter. I've never been a bar staff. I've never done any pot wash. So for me, we're setting up a business, but I'm hoping I'll get key members of the team that can look after that, and they'll run the business, because that isn't what I do. For me, this was a different challenge, where I'm an entrepreneur and I wanted to do it, but I don't necessarily want to be hands-on in that business doing day-to-day activities.
So me and Andy should keep ourselves free for the launch party then, Palmer.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Brilliant. Yeah, we'll be there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you again, Palm, for this conversation. We want to, you know, ask this question we ask to all of our guests. If you were to have chai with three guests, living or otherwise, who would they be and why?
Tony Robbins, Richard Branson, Cristiano Ronaldo. I don't support Man United.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, that is interesting.
Okay.
Tony Robbins, for those that don't know him, is a life and business coach. I've been to a lot of his events. He's all about priming, mental state, improvement, being the best of you. And I think that's really important in life and business. So having him at the table, I was trying to delve into that and see how he's got himself into the physical and mental state that he maintains all the time. Richard Branson has always been an idol of mine. You know, the guy runs hundreds of companies and they're not small either. And I'd just like to get into his brain and understand how he's built them brands, how he's built them businesses, how he maintains them. He's not necessarily young, but he's still building businesses. He's still buying businesses. He's still doing business. And I would love to understand from his mind how he's delivered that and how he's become that and how he continues to do that. Cristiano Ronaldo, like I said, I don't support Man United. I'm not really a football fan. I don't support any football team. But a footballer that's 36 years old, that's one of the best in the world, outside of the age range that they typically should be. Like, you know, most people say footballer's prime is in their 20s.
Yeah.
He's nearly in his 40s and he's still in peak shape, peak state. People, some crazy stat, like Man United paid 15 million for him and they sold 156 million pounds worth of his shirts within 48 hours. That is marketing and branding at its peak. You know, his brand is phenomenal. So for me, them three people at the table would be phenomenal because you'd understand peak state, priming, PR, business, all on one table.
No, that sounds a fantastic conversation there, Palm. So great. I just wanted to say thank you so much for your time today, Palm. Really enjoyed our conversation today. And it's been great talking to you and good to catch up with you too.
And you guys, thank you so much.
Thanks, Palm. And where can people find you online?
So Instagram, Palm Bangle, Facebook, Palm Bangle, website, palmbangle.co.uk. So if you type me on Google, I should be top unless someone's beat me in the last 24 hours.
That's great. All right. Thanks a lot, Thanks. Palm.
Thank you.
Hi there. Thanks again for listening to the Business Over Chai podcast. If you like this content, please hit subscribe. And if you have any feedback, please give us a review. You can also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter with the handle Business Over Chai, or alternatively on our website, businessoverchai.com. Thanks again for listening.